Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see everybody. Okay, so today's topic is Judaism and vegetarianism. Being a vegetarian, and the question is, what does the Bible, what does the Torah have to say about it? What are some other sources from a Jewish perspective relating to vegetarianism? We'll say from the onset, this is maybe like the most important point, so we'll say it at the beginning, which is that the Torah, Judaism doesn't say you have to be not be a vegetarian or be a vegetarian. Ultimately, it's up to every person to decide what works for them, what they'd like. So the question really is, does Judaism still have some sources that relate to vegetarianism, etc. But ultimately, it's not like you have to, do one thing or the other. So we'll start off with a discussion, you can feel free to weigh in, to raise your hand and say something about vegetarianism, whether... If you'd like to share, if you happen to be one, and why, if you think that it makes sense to be a vegetarian, to be a vegan, or if you think it's not that important, and I do eat meat, and here's why. So I guess like the pros and cons of vegetarianism, and I actually have here. A whole sheet with 21 different pros and cons. I didn't put it on your sheet, but pros and cons of being a vegetarian. And a lot of it's from like a health perspective. And they're actually, on either side of it, there are points made saying that it's good for your health to be a vegetarian, and it's good for your health to not be a vegetarian, and so it just adds to the to the interesting point, which is that there's room on both sides to make an argument. So again, does anyone have anything to say about being a vegetarian? What you think about it? What your thoughts are? Have you ever thought about being one?
Being vegetarian, you don't have protein.
Great. Okay.
Unless you want to eat fish for that.
Okay, very good. Okay, so let's say a couple points. First of all, so being a vegan, and again, as I say with all these topics, I'm not an expert. We're all learning together. Okay, so vegan is that you're not even going to eat fish, besides from meat and chicken, you're not even going to eat fish, and even eggs. I think vegans avoid, whereas vegetarian, you'll eat eggs and fish, just not meat or chicken. Okay, so your point is, well, where does a vegetarian get their protein from? Which is very important for a diet, for health, is protein. So you're saying you can eat fish.
I become vegetarian only when I go to a restaurant that's not kosher.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'm vegetarian.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. That's a good point. That if you're, vegetarian is helps from the kosher laws because you're not involving any meat or chicken. That's a good point. So in terms of protein, so I do think that vegetarians have other alternatives. You have the fish, eggs, like nuts, have are part of protein, I believe. Right, exactly. There are other alternatives. I think, like tofu, is that protein?
Yeah.
Okay, tofu, and then they make like vegetarian sausages and. and that kind of, you know, vegetarian hamburgers. Also cheese as protein.
Cheese, but you cannot eat cheese, well, of course, if you don't eat meat.
Right. if you don't eat meat, you can have as much cheese as you want.
That's right. If you don't eat meat, you can eat cheese.
There you go. You don't have to worry about it. Okay. So, yeah. Let me... Oh. So... You're actually onto something. On the pros and cons of being a vegetarian, con number three is meat is the most convenient protein source available. Meaning you shouldn't be a vegetarian because where are you going to get your protein? Most plant foods do not provide adequate levels of all the essential amino acids, which are part of protein, in a single serving. So, in other words, it's not saying that you can't get protein from being a vegetarian. It's saying that you need to eat, I think, more than a single serving of meat would get you protein that you need. You need to have more, double or triple the amount in non-meat products like cheese or fish. And so... That's something. I'll just run through some of the other things while we're on the subject of pro-meat. So this is both from health perspective as well as a general perspective. So con number one, eating meat is not cruel or unethical. It's a natural part of the cycle of life, right? So the argument is that vegetarians say that animal life is more important than plant life. And very interestingly, research shows that plants respond electrochemically to threats and may feel fear. So every time that a vegetarian eats and kills a plant, so to speak, they're also causing harm. Now that's an amazing kind of thing, that even a plant has some sort of feeling. I'm sure there are those that dispute that, you know, and say that's not the same thing as when you, you know, kill an animal. But, and every organism on Earth eventually, you know, has to die, so what's the big problem with, you know, having some hamburgers from a cow, you know, would it, you know, eventually, you know, everyone's going to have to, you know, pass on. So, you know, it's a part of life. Okay, that's one argument. Another argument is that eating meat has been part of human evolution for many years, for many centuries, right? Meat provides protein, which allows us to develop our brains and our intelligence, right? So that's what humans do. We eat meat. It's like part of our DNA. So, and then we talked about, now it talks about a lot about the health. Healthy fats, best source of vitamin B12, iron, weight loss. Vegetarian diets are not necessarily better for the environment. Because they say here that when you, like beans, for example, like soybeans, actually are genetically modified to be immune from herbicides. So basically, there are chemicals, you know, if you want to say that, you know, meat is not, you know, ethical, the whole slaughtering business is not ethical, is not better for the environment, well, they say that when farmers use toxins to help their fields.
Grow.
Yeah, right. To basically to get rid of the weeds, right? Not their product. To get rid of the weeds, so then it's toxic to other plants and fish. So meaning that even vegetarians, if you're worried about the environment,
you have
so. Right, but even vegetarians have to deal with the fact that farming nowadays could involve toxins, which are bad for the environment as well. So that's also something to keep in mind. Yes.
All right, now, this is how I feel, because I do it for health reasons.
Okay, so...
And if you're going to be a vegetarian, there's a lot of ways of getting protein, like you said, nuts, eggs. I eat eggs. The doctor said I should eat eggs.
Okay. Great.
But now I've gone the organic way.
Okay.
Because if you want to eat healthy, I know it's a little more expensive, but that's the way you have to
go. So you've stepped up your consumption of...
I don't buy any canned goods.
Right.
I'm not allowed any salt in my diet.
So that's a good point, which is that if you're thinking about health, so just saying no meat, but yes, you know, eggs and, you know, canned...
And a little cheese, but it has to be low salt cheese.
Right. So if you're thinking about your health, so it's not necessarily, you know, vegetarianism good, meat bad. It's you have to think even more critically if you're really serious about it. And if you're, you know, into the organic route, so even if you're dealing with non-meat products, there are ways that are better for your health, and not even within the general vegetarian realm. So that's, yeah.
And a lot of people our age do not read labels. That's the most important thing. You've got to be able to read a label.
Right.
Because everything has salt.
Right.
Some things have more. Salt is a killer more than sugar.
Mm-hmm.
I've been through this for years now.
So mm-hmm.
It's very important you learn to read a label.
Mm.
That's why if it doesn't say no salt on the can, it doesn't go in my cup.
Interesting.
That's a killer.
Yeah. I would say, unfortunately, you know, with, you know, needing to just, you know, get what's in the supermarket.
Right.
So unfortunately, you know, we're not always so conscious about things. And you're pointing out that even innocuous, seemingly goods can have, you know, too much salt, too much sugar.
And that's why I can't eat kosher here.
Mm-hmm.
I go here, but I only have fruits and vegetables here. I'll have an occasional tuna.
Right.
And if they make salmon, I'll eat that.
Because there's too much salt.
And you never get it out, so it's in there.
Yeah.
And I'm still cooking. I'm able to cook.
Mm-hmm.
So I buy my own, you know, that doesn't have salt.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. So, give me 1 second. Yeah. Let's now, the last couple cons. There's nothing inherently cruel about raising animals for food. Animals raised in the United States for certified organic meat must be given access to the outdoors, to the clean air, and to the water. Meaning that there are some animal products where you can still eventually consume them for meat and chicken, but they are taken care of in a very good way. Unfortunately, not every case of animal slaughter is up to par with what we would expect with treating everything with a certain level of humanity. That's true, but there are definitely places where they are very careful to raise the animals, you know, even, you know, before slaughter in a very good way. However, in Judaism, we talk about eating veal. Now, I don't know about you, but I enjoyed veal. I haven't had it in a while, though. And so veal, you know, the soft, you know, trying to get the soft meat. And so they're young, these young calves, right? So... in order to get it soft, so they keep it, they keep the calves in a confined area without a lot of sunlight, and it helps the meat. So a lot of, there is some concern in Jewish sources as to consuming veal, because the veal, are specifically not given, treatment you know, proper moral ethical treatment that you would for other cuts of meat. They're specifically confined and etc. So specifically for something like that, it's hard to make the argument that the veal are, you know, that the calves for veal are treated in the best possible way. And so that's why there are some that say that we shouldn't have veal if we're really concerned about treating animals correctly. Now, we have in the Torah, we have this notion of tsar balei chayim, that we don't want to cause pain to animals. And so that's something, you know, to think about when you talk about, you know, eating meat and how it was raised. Another con, meaning another pro for meat, is that we have a right to eat what we want, and it's a liberty. Meaning, I want to eat meat. It's available. This is what we've been doing. So don't tell me I can't eat meat. It's a liberty. It's something that we're allowed to do. Animal rights groups, say those on the side of eating meat, are attempting to control personal behavior. And they would like to see meat consumption severely restricted, if not outlawed, through the use of lawsuits, taxation, and government regulations. What people eat should be a protected personal choice. If I want to have a steak, if I want to eat meat, that should be my choice. You can be a vegetarian, but don't tell me, which is kind of what some groups do, is that no one can eat meat. And so it should really be left up to the individual. And so that's also something to consider. Now, on the other side, meaning pro-vegetarian, the first one, I think this is maybe the main one from an ethical perspective, is that it's cruel and unethical to kill animals for food when vegetarian options are available. So this argument goes that animals are sentient beings, right? They have you know, thoughts and feelings and emotions and social connections, and so you know, these animals can experience stress, pain, and fear. And how many animals in the U.S., how many cows are slaughtered each year? Does anyone have a guess? More than that. Yeah, 35 million cows. Yeah. So these animals should not have to die to satisfy an unnecessary dietary preference. And nowadays you have, one second, nowadays you have so many other options. And like we said, you can get your protein through, you know, vegetarian meat. Right. Right. But that's the concern, that we should, why should we do that if there are other...
And he has to be bled.
Right.
No blood in his
brain. Now here's another interesting point. Human anatomy has evolved to support a primarily vegetarian diet. Humans, think about it, do not have a large mouth or long pointed teeth like carnivores. Human teeth are flat and short, and they're meant for chewing, you know, chewing food that's, you know, soft. They have short intestines. Carnivores do. Carnivorous animals have short intestines, where human intestines are a lot longer to allow the slower digestion of plant foods. So apparently it takes longer to digest plant foods than meat. And so humans, it seems, are evolved to the point where we seem like we're more well suited to eat from a vegetarian diet. And other things are that a vegetarian diet can help alleviate world hunger. Because if you have a lot of plant protein, they're used to produce a pound of beef, right? So in order to get our meat, to get our cows, we have to feed them. How much do we feed them? we feed them a lot of plant protein. But if these grains were fed to humans instead of animals, so then they say here that 925 million people, more people in the world, would be able to get more food. So in other words, it costs food to get meat, because you have to feed.
Because they cannot eat anything in the
exactly. There needs to be something specific, and so while we're doing that, we're wasting, so to speak, plant foods that we can use to give to other people that are hungry. Exactly. Now, other things from a health perspective, a vegetarian diet reduces developing gallstones and kidney stones. A vegetarian diet gives you more iron, which is interesting because the con for this, for number six, this was pro number six, con number six is that meat provides better iron. So you see, it's the same exact thing. Iron, the vegetarians would say that you get better iron from a vegetarian perspective.
Yeah, you can find iron in the spinach.
Right.
In lots of fish.
Leafy greens, exactly.
You can find iron.
Right. Eating meat increases the risk of getting type 2 diabetes. A vegetarian diet lowers the risk of heart disease. Vegetarians live longer. Of course, on the other side, meat eaters would say vegetarians do not live longer. Okay, now from an ethical perspective, animals raised for food in the United States are not slaughtered humanely. Okay, we can get back to that. Raising animals in confinement is cruel. Okay, so basically you have arguments on both sides for vegetarianism, from a health perspective, from a ethical perspective, and so those that choose to be a vegetarian from an ethical perspective have arguments, but it's possible if you think about it, there also were mentioned reasons that eating meat is not terrible ethically. There are counter arguments for eating meat, and so that's why it's sort of a personal choice from that perspective. Now, you could argue, a vegetarian might argue that we don't think about these things. We don't weigh the options either way because we've been primed to eat meat and chicken. That's what we grew up with. So they would say that you're not thinking, we're just eating meat because that's how we were raised, which is a fair point. Okay, so now those of you that have the sheets, I want to go through some of the Jewish perspectives and Jewish sources. So in source number one, God said, right, this is from Bereishis, Genesis 1:29, "See, I have given you every seed-bearing plant upon the earth and every tree with the seed-bearing fruit, they shall be yours for food. But in, to all the animals on land and the birds and to everything that goes on the ground, on the earth that has life, I have given all the green plants for food." Says the commentary on the bottom, which is Rashi, he says that he did not permit, the underlined English, he did not permit Adam and his wife to kill a creature and to eat its flesh. Only every green herb they were all permitted to eat equally. Only when the sons of Noah came, he permitted them to eat flesh. So basically, the idea is that originally, God said, what should humans eat when he first created Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava? Eat vegetarian, eat plants, eat lettuce, eat salad, potatoes, whatever. But that's it. That's all that we started with. God said, you know, stay away from the animals and just eat the plants. Exactly. We're going to get to that in 1 second.
The meat was clean of the blood.
Right.
By the flood.
Right. Okay. So we're going to get to that in 1 second. But it's important to realize, just, you know, looking at it, that originally it was just vegetables. So we'll see a comment about that, about how originally it was vegetables. So now if you turn to the next page, Genesis 9:3, which is after the flood, after the Mabul with Noah. Every creature that lives shall be yours to eat. As with the green grasses, I have given you all these. Meaning, just like up until now, you can eat lettuce and tomatoes, etc. So now you can also eat meat. You can also eat animals. However, you must not eat flesh with its lifeblood in it. Meaning, there are certain restrictions. You should not eat blood, right? There's a prohibition against eating blood. That's why we...
Against eating what?
Blood. Consuming blood. That's why we salt the animals for 3 days to get the blood out. Fine. But we can eat meat. Says the Rashi, meaning the gray box, for I did not permit the first man, Adam, to eat meat, only vegetation. But for you, just like the green vegetation, which I permitted to him, I've given you everything. So now you can eat meat as well. Now you can eat, there are restrictions, of, like we said, the blood and the way that it's slaughtered, and only certain animals, but that is the... He's quoting from the Talmud, which is the next source. And so you can read it on your own, but Rashi basically quoted the Talmud, right? Which makes that point. So now if you turn to the next page, the question is, why was meat allowed now only after the flood, right?
Because it was washed of all the blood.
Why couldn't you wash the blood in the beginning with Adam and Eve and do it that way? Why? I don't understand your answer. You could wash the blood. Are you saying that the waters of the flood wash the blood? So why couldn't you do that before? Yeah, why couldn't you do that before?
And then the water again.
Right. Okay. But the question is, why now? Why was there a change? Why originally was God told Adam, mankind, basically, to not eat meat, to avoid meat, just stick to vegetarian diet? But then after the flood, when God was basically saying, we're going to start over with Noah, then you can eat meat. So why the change?
Because of the children that Noah had.
So children...
He said you can eat meat, the children.
Once you have the children and they require, meat, you know, to grow healthy and... 1 second. To grow healthy and strong, so then you can eat meat. That answer doesn't... I like your thought, but I would counter by saying that there were children before the flood also. I mean, Adam and Eve had children.
But like you said, this was a start over of the world. The whole thing was starting over anew. Maybe this was a different way of thinking.
Okay. All right.
Possibly.
Okay. So it was...
After the flood.
Yeah.
The flood washed the meat.
Yes, you said that.
Of the blood.
Yes.
Cannot eat meat, it contains still the blood.
Right.
What I don't understand, Rabbi, and I've been around for a while now, What was the point of draining out all the blood to begin with of the animals? Why was that done? That's not done when you buy non-kosher meat, right?
I'm not sure your question.
The way they got rid of all the blood, besides soaking.
At a certain point in time? Are you saying in general?
They slaughtered the animals.
What you're talking about, a certain time in history or in general?
It started then, right?
Okay.
They slaughtered the animals.
Which we still do today.
Which is upside down, and then they slit the throat.
Yeah.
Over.
Yeah.
But they let it drain all the blood.
Yeah.
And then they kosher.
Yeah.
What is the point? Why is that done to begin? Why do you have to get rid of all the blood?
Because we're not supposed to consume blood. It's a separate prohibition to consume blood,
but
so...
Draining out as it's...
Yeah, but we want to make sure that it's all off. So if there's still a little bit left, so we want to make sure that it's not there.
Okay.
So the salt, we drain it, then the salt,
salt
gets out the blood, and then we wash off the salt.
The salt will take
yes, exactly.
the blood and the water.
Yes.
Which is the unhealthy part for me.
It never came back.
Yeah, but don't they wash off the salt?
Yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't come off once it's soaked all that time. But, you know, that's up to the, like you said, that's up to the person.
Yeah.
And if you want to carry it out, you know,
okay.
religion, that's important. I understand.
So are you saying that kosher chicken is going to inherently have more, is going to have salt
yeah.
still on it when you buy it in the store?
Inside.
Mm-hmm.
Here, even when we eat in our dining room, everything is got kosher. Not just kosher, it's glatt kosher.
Yeah.
So, I understand it's even more so. And they don't, we're not allowed to have certain vegetables because we're told they can't clean them right.
Right. I don't know if the glatt has to do with the salt, though.
Now, what is glatt kosher?
Okay, so glatt kosher is basically that if you're dealing with the lungs, right? So there's... It's complicated, the laws of kosher slaughter. And so, glatt means in Yiddish, does anyone know?
Pure, something pure.
Yeah, but it literally means something flat. So we want to make sure that the lungs don't have sirchot, which are adhesions or lesions on the throat. So glatt is basically the standard that makes sure that there are very few, if any, things on the throat because we don't want to. No, we don't want to tear the neck when we slaughter it. So basically, we want it as smooth.
It has to be
right. We want the neck to be as throat to be as smooth as possible. So.
Parts of the cow. You can only go so far. You can't use the whole cow.
Yeah, you can't use the hind quarters. In America, kosher slaughter, we don't deal with that because of the other prohibition of not having the Gid HaNasheh, the hind quarters. That's the story with Jacob and the angel. So the sciatic nerve is in that, like sirloin, right, is like the loin. So we avoid that area. Now, because it's very hard to, it is possible to get the meat that's not part of the Gid HaNasheh, the sciatic nerve area.
It's also the nerve.
Yes. It is possible to get the meat and avoid the nerve, but it's very difficult to do so, and it's...
You cannot eat because of the nerve.
Yes, I know. So that's why in America, kosher slaughter, we just avoid the area because, you know, we can't get it. In Israel... However, and also there is someone in America that I've heard of, a slaughterer, and in Israel, they are able to get more of the part of that animal because they're better, they're more adept, or they're more trusted to get the meat and still avoid getting the nerve. So it's just a... The nerve, the sciatic nerve area of the animal, so we're not allowed to eat it. But that doesn't mean that we can't have the meat around it.
No, they just leave the whole part.
Yes, in America, yes. But what I'm saying is that there are places in Israel, slaughterers, which are able, very few though, but there are some that are able expertly to get rid of, to get the meat, more of the meat, without still avoiding getting the nerve. So.
Yeah, even in Morocco.
Yeah.
They have the way how to cut.
That's okay. So Morocco also.
Yeah, that's very similar.
Okay, but right, very good. So Morocco, maybe the more Sephardic, Yemenite.
Yeah, Sephardic.
Yeah.
They do that.
Right, but in America we don't.
I remember, I'm a nurse.
Yeah.
And I was curious. And I went to see some butcher.
Yeah.
And they were showing us, you know, how, because the sciatic nerve goes like that.
Yeah.
And they have the exact.
Yeah.
And,
you know.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it was
kosher. Otherwise, they keep the whole part.
Exactly. Right. So. Okay. So, So if you look on your sheet, I wrote approach one and approach two. Now there could be a lot more approaches, which I didn't yet see, but these are the two that I found. And you can tell me if they're convincing to you. So number one, approach number one, I wrote Radak. That's the name of the commentary. So he says, permission to eat meat would be granted only after the flood, and we are not sure why.
Why? Because the flood washed it.
Yes. One second. Well, let's see what he says. Perhaps the reason is that God had already foreseen that during the generation of the flood, Noah would be the one who would be directly instrumental in saving the animals. And the permission to eat meat became part of Noah's reward for his labor feeding all the animals in the ark for a full year. So in other words, because Noah, right, and their midrashim stories, crazy stories about how he was 24/7. Noah was running around the ark with his sons because he had to feed all the animals at certain times, certain types of food. And one time he was, the midrash says, with the lions, he was late with his food and he got bitten because the lion was upset that he was getting its food too late. Now, a question that just came to mind is if some of the lions, etc., if they eat meat, so where did they get the meat? If the whole point was that we were saving all of the animals, so where did he get meat? You know, like, you know, sheep or whatever, cow, to serve the lions. If so. Okay, so, but anyway, besides for that, so because Noah was so tirelessly for all the time in the flood working with the animals, so he was given a reward that after the flood he was able to eat it. Okay, now, you know, it's an answer, it's not, you know, it's just an approach, but... Yeah, so that's the first approach, is that it was a way of God saying, you know, thanks for all your hard work, now enjoy a steak. Okay, so that's one approach. The second approach is that Chizkuni, the reason why God permitted even eating living creatures after they were killed was that all of them had to thank man for having kept them from perishing during the flood. As a result, all the animals were now totally at the mercy of man. So that's a similar answer, right? Slightly different. So the first answer is that because Noah took care of them in the flood, right? So he was given a reward. The second one is that the animals owed humanity, Noah, saving them in general, right? Because without Noah bringing them into the ark, they wouldn't have been saved. So they were, in a sense, became subservient to man precisely because they were saved from the flood. So the two answers are very similar, slightly different. So that's one school of thought. Yeah. Now, the next thing is Rabbi Cook. So Rabbi Cook was the chief rabbi of Israel. He's famous for being the, you know, a scholar, a rabbi that is advocating that the ideal for Judaism is to go back to vegetarianism, is not to eat meat ultimately, and that we're only eating it now after the fact kind of bidyavad, meaning it's we're not ideally supposed to be eating meat. So he writes a lot about this, and I included some of it on the sheet. So let me just read from what I have. So he basically makes a bunch of points. So the first point is that it's impossible to imagine that God, who has mercy upon all his creatures, would establish an eternal decree in the creation, which he said was very good, tov ma'od, that it should be impossible for the human race to exist without violating its own moral instincts by shedding blood, be it even the blood of animals. So first he says, it's impossible that God, who is basically saying that his world is complete and very good, would have humans, would require humans that the only way that they would get meat, nutritious food, would be via meat. Because he says, he's seemingly saying that it should really go against humans for eating meat. That really, they should be against it in their hearts, because they should know that it's ethically not a good thing to line the cattle and the sheep up and to slaughter them. And I don't know if I made this point yet, even though, you know, kosher slaughter ideally, like was said before, should be of the highest standard. We don't stun the animals to death. We don't hunt them. We have to slaughter them in a very quick and efficient manner with a very smooth knife, right? So that's so we're not, you know, taking a saw and hacking the animal apart. You know, we're not doing that. We're supposed to be the knife. It's very specific. The knife has to be perfectly sharp. Yeah, right. Your father was a shochet? Oh, wow. Okay, so you have a lot of insight. Right. You have to spend hours to sharpen the knife so that when you slaughter, it takes a second and that's it. To make sure that the suffering of the animal is at an absolute minimum. Exactly. Unfortunately, in all full disclosure, there are Jewish slaughterhouses where the care of the animal, forget the actual slaughter for a second, but the care of the animal is not necessarily up to what we would consider ethical. And there's videos and articles written about it, about how animals are not treated the best. Now, certain places, they are. It's not every kosher slaughterhouse, but certainly there are some. And there are those that want to make sure that besides the meat being kosher, that the meat, that the animal were also treated.
They make them in the water and then they salt them.
Yes, right. But we're talking about how they're treated prior to slaughter. They want to make sure that you, besides for being kosher, that the meat was treated, that the animal was treated ethically beforehand, which isn't at every place, but ideally Jewish slaughter should be, you know, the quickest way to do it. But he's saying, besides for that, even if the kosher slaughter way is the best way, but still you're killing another sentient being. You're still, even if it's not another person, but you're still killing something. And he says that it's impossible that that should be the only way that, you know, God would have humans, you know, have to get their food. That there has to be an alternative. Then he says that, the Torah attests that all humanity once possessed this lofty moral level. So this is like a third approach, right? So to our question before, what changed? Why before no animals allowed, and then after the flood, animals were allowed? So he says that originally, Adam was not permitted to eat meat. Eating meat was permitted only to children of Noah after the flood. Is it conceivable that this moral excellence, meaning avoiding eating meat and killing animals, which once existed as an inherent human characteristic, should be lost forever? So he's saying that for whatever reason, you know, maybe Adam and Eve were at a very high spiritual level, which equates to not eating meat, right? So Rabbi Cook's theory and his approach is that originally, since Adam and Eve were told not to eat meat, that reveals to us, that matches up with their spiritual character, that they were of a higher spiritual character, that they could get their food without having to kill it. And so he says that even though, for whatever reason, we'll get to it in a second, as to why meat was allowed afterwards, but that is human. That's reflecting humanity at a lower spiritual level, and that it's impossible that at a certain point we won't be able, or we won't be urged and encouraged to go back to that original spiritual level of only eating vegetarianism. He says, in the future, God shall cause us to make great spiritual strides and thus extricate us from this complex question of having to eat meat or not. In other words, in the future, God will instill in us the inspiration to start becoming vegetarians and not eating meat. Right? He continues, when humanity, this is your second to last page, those that have the sheets. When humanity reaches its peak of complete happiness and spiritual liberation, when it attains perfection, right, meaning in the times of the Mashiach, right, when the world becomes elevated spiritually, so we will have the age of motivation by virtue of enlightenment, which is basically a fancy way of saying that we're going to become more spiritually enlightened. Right? Yeah, we're going to become more spiritually in touch with and kind with ourselves. Human beings will recognize their companions in creation, all of the animals. We're going to stop to say, says Rabbi Cook, in the times of the Messiah, we're going to stop and say, well, you know what? That cow, that sheep, it's a human, it's a being like myself. So why should I have the right to kill it? So that is going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
When humanity reaches a higher spiritual level,
at the times
of the Mashiach. And they will see how fitting it is from the standpoint of the purest ethical standard not to resort to moral concessions, to compromise the divine attribute of justice with that of mercy by permitting mankind to eat animals, because they will no longer need extenuating concessions. Because the Talmud says the Torah speaks only of the evil inclination. Right? Rather, they will walk the path of absolute good. So the next point that he says...
We have to go.
You can go if you'd like. We're going to continue a little bit. Basically, what he says is that the only reason that meat was allowed now is because we have an evil inclination. Meaning, and in this sense, it's to eat meat, right? Meaning, we're going to eat meat, right? There's enough people, they're meat and potatoes. They're, you know, the Friday night, you know, roast chicken. That's what we're going to do. And we're going to get our meat somehow, right? Our hamburgers and our hot dogs. So it's going to happen. So God says, all right, if you're going to do it, let me at least, you know, set the rules for how it's supposed to be done. If you're going to do it anyway, right? But that's only a backup. That's only a concession. The ideal is that we shouldn't need to, you know, we should overcome our urge for meat and chicken and poultry by just saying we can get by with potatoes, with you know, lettuce, tomato, with a vegetarian diet. We don't need the meat, right? Then he goes on to say that even though once we have shechita, once we have human meat slaughter, it must be sanctified in a unique manner, with the minimum pain to the animal, right? And that will teach us in our minds that the animal is a sentient being. He's not a random object. He's a living, feeling creature, and the person, the shochet, must become attuned to its emotions and senses and have a feeling for its life, of its family members, and to the compassion of its own offspring. And so basically, the act of shechita is supposed to tell us, even though I'm about to kill this animal, but I need to think about it and it sounds kind of hypocritical if you want to be skeptical of this and say, oh, you know, you're going to stop and say, well, I'm going to slaughter it very ethically and cleanly, and I'm first going to think about its family, you know, the family of the cow, and, you know, and how it once was part of the family, etc., etc. But then I'm going to, you know, get down to business so I can have my steak, right? So some will say, oh, you're a very compassionate person because you stopped for a minute to think about the cow's family before you slaughter it. Wow, you're such a holy person, right? But the non-skeptical way of looking at it is that, okay, listen, everyone in the world eats meat. So, you know, we're going to eat meat also as Jews. But if we have to do it, we're going to try to do it with some understanding, some thinking. Now, do kosher slaughterers who are trying to make a living also and are doing chickens, you know, one after, are they really
goose and turkey?
Are they really thinking about these feelings when they do it? I don't think so. But according to Rabbi Cook, that is the ideal, right? As a lot of things in Judaism, we have ideals and then we have realities. But That's his ideal. Now, Rabbi Cook was a very spiritual person anyway, so that's his approach. You know, other people will you know, kind of maybe roll their eyes and say, come on, we're going to do shechita at the proper way, which in and of itself is inherently ethical, but come on, it's cows, there's millions of cows. We're going to eat them, right? Because everything in the jungle, this one eats this one and this one eats that one. So we're humans. We're on the higher part of the food chain. So that's what we're going to do. So
sir, can we
yes, you can go if you'd like. Now, he also points out, just to close with his approach, is that there are other things having to do with animals in Judaism in terms of slaughter that contribute to this notion that we have to treat them ethically. You can't kill a mother and you can't slaughter a mother animal with its son on the same day, because that's like, you know, that would be like going too far. And you can't, right, we know that you can't cook a mother's the mother in the kid's milk, right? the kid in the mother's milk, right? So there are certain that also shows us that even though we're allowed to do slaughter or shechita nowadays, we have to do it in a certain way. Now he goes on to talk about more of this, how animals will be elevated in our eyes spiritually, etc., etc. So that's Rabbi Cook's approach. Not everyone has that approach. Some will say, you know what? Now we can eat meat, and it's part of Judaism, and, there's no reason to think that we're going to stop eating meat. That's just what it is. Now, I just want to take 5 more minutes to close with the notion of, well, wait a second. Don't I need to have chicken for Shabbos? Don't I need to have, meat for Pesach, right? Brisket for Rosh Hashanah. What do you mean? Judaism and Judaism's meals include meat.
Eating the meat.
Yeah. So what do you mean? Instead of my Rosh Hashanah brisket, I'm going to have my Rosh Hashanah, tofu burger with broccoli and cauliflower casserole. No, it needs to be a brisket for Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, so how can you be a vegetarian? Where's room for vegetarian? You have to have meat, right? For Shabbat, for the Sabbath, for Yom Tov. You have to have meat, right?
Yeah.
So basically in 5 minutes, the answer is you don't really, okay? So basically it goes like this, right? So where does it come from eating meat on a holiday? It comes from the fact that we have to have sacrifices, right? The karbanot, the shlamim, and the for Pesach, for Passover, the Paschal lamb, right? So it starts from that, from the obligation to have the sacrifices, to have the animals. So Maimonides says that. We see from here that there's no joy without meat and wine, right? That meat and wine is part of a celebration of a holiday. Okay, meat and wine sounds pretty clear. The commentaries say that that really is just reflecting
I'm okay. I'm in a class. He will call me in. What do we have to do with the
cap,
the head, and the feet?
Okay, so there, you have to have meat and wine, but the commentaries say that that's only a reflection of the meat from the sacrifice. And nowadays, we don't have the sacrifice, so there's no obligation anymore to have the meat. The only obligation to have the meat was in the biblical temple times, right? Well, that's when we brought the sacrifices. So that's when you have to have the meat. But nowadays, we don't have that anymore. So we don't have to do the meat. Other commentaries say that the whole idea of celebrating a holiday in Judaism is to enjoy it.
And we have to have the meat.
So those that enjoy having meat, that's. So we're told that to have meat, to make a chicken, to make a brisket, because that helps you, during the holiday, to have wine, to have a Bordeaux, right? So that's how you enjoy the holiday. Those that do not enjoy meat and would prefer fish, if you're not a vegan, you'd prefer a nice salad and nice warm bread and maybe a veggie burger, a broccoli casserole. That's what you prefer. So there's no point in having meat. You're not going to enjoy. You enjoy what you like to eat. And if you like to eat vegetarian, so go ahead. You're allowed to do that. There's another source which indicates that fish is part of celebrating a holiday. So therefore, if you're not a vegan, but you are a vegetarian, so, which is a whole other interesting topic, because fish in Judaism, we don't slaughter the fish. we don't, we don't, Yeah. So the question is, so do vegetarians, what do they think about fish? If they eat fish, right? I can understand eggs maybe, but fish, how is fish? You're eating an animal. How is that different than eating a cow? So, I don't know. You'd have to ask a vegetarian how they differentiate.
Maybe because you don't kill the fish.
Well, you do. I mean, you do. I mean, it's out of the water. Yeah, you took it out of the water, so it died. So leave it in the water. Yeah, you would do. By taking it out of the water, you're because causing its breath. Well, you're taking it. Why do you have to take it out of the water? Leave it in the water. I get what you're saying. You're saying you don't actively take it and slice it, but... Okay, yeah.
All right, many years ago, I was in Israel on Passover.
Yeah.
Because my son married a Sephardic Jew.
Okay.
So I'm waiting. You know, I'm used to the traditional meal. There wasn't a piece of meat. It was all fish.
Mm-hmm.
Or even had the head.
Yeah.
They had felt the fish. They had fish as the main
dish. Yeah.
There was not a fish. Why?
Why? Because they were vegetarian?
Sephardic.
Well, Sephardic still eat.
But their particular family.
Okay, so they did fish. Okay.
They did not even have chicken soup.
Interesting.
And I'm sitting there,
you don't put the knife.
You could have had chicken soup without chicken. You can do the.
You don't put the knife.
I was used to
all
those kind of dishes. You know, one after the other.
Yeah.
Interesting meal.
That's a little bit different. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Why can't chicken be parved? Because it doesn't have cloves, hoofs.
Interesting.
Whatever is the other requirement.
Yeah, so I don't know if...
chicken be parved?
Well, that's a very good thought, and I'll address that in 1 second. The first point is really that The hooves and the chewits cud is really the requirement for like the cows and the sheep brand of animals. Right? Meaning the poultry is separate, right? So poultry is we know that a chicken is kosher, for instance.
Yeah.
But so that's separate. The hooves is and the cud is really saying, okay, what, you know, larger animals beside non poultry are kosher. So it's more about what's kosher and not... So, yeah, it's meat, obviously, but so is chicken meat, because it's the flesh of the chicken.
But fish is part of it.
Correct. So why is fish part of it? It's the flesh of the fish. That's a great question. Why is fish part of it? It should be... Maybe it should be meat, because it's the meat of the fish. Yeah, so you could say, well, it's tied to the slaughter, meaning anything that gets slaughtered is meat, and fish that we said doesn't get slaughtered is not meat. Now, exactly what the connection is, even though if that's true, like, why should that be, is another thing. Although you could say, well, an egg is also parved, even though an egg has the yolk, which, you know, is also, you know, an animal kind of thing. So... that's a good question, and I can look into it more because I don't have 100% answer.
It's vital.
What?
It's vital.
What is?
For you me to know that answer.
Oh, about the fish and the parv. Well, it is parv. It is parv. Now you said chicken being not meat. There is an opinion that maybe chicken is not exactly the same as meat. In terms of having chicken with milk, that it might only be prohibited on a rabbinic level, not on a biblical level, as like meat. In other words, chicken and milk maybe it still can't have, but it's less of a prohibition than meat and milk. There is an opinion like that. So you're onto something. Not that it's necessarily part of, but that it's not exactly the same as meat, but it's still fleshic. Yeah.
All right, now maybe, I don't know, I'm thinking, fish does not bleed that much, and it does not have to be salted or kosher.
So maybe it's
might be the reason.
Yeah, right, which is maybe tied to the slaughter, yeah. Meaning you don't have to slaughter it, because
no.
There's no blood, it's just you catch it and...
take the hook out and don't put it back in the water.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right. Right. Exactly.
There's
so.
Different ways.
So that's why fish would be different. Yeah. Very good. Okay. So. Correct. Only because that's more of
because
exactly, it's a crustacean.
Right.
So the question is, how do you know which fish is kosher, which is not? So it's one of those things where you have to have a tradition, just like with birds. We have a tradition, which is why turkey, interestingly, is a question, because do we have a tradition that turkey is kosher? Is a question. Some say that it's not the majority opinion, but there is a rabbi that says that maybe turkey, because we don't have a tradition, a clear tradition that it's kosher, so we can't have it. Meaning he's not saying that when other people eat it, they're eating non-kosher, but he's saying that from his perspective, we don't, just like chicken, we have a tradition that it's kosher, but turkey is this kind of bird that we don't necessarily know, because it wasn't as common, I guess, in Europe, right, to have turkey or whatever. So how do we? It's kind of like, I guess, a relatively new thing in I guess you could say, you know, Judaism, kosher slaughter world, to have turkey. So is it, you know, do we have a tradition for it that we can eat it? So most say yes, right, that it either we do, or, you know, or it resembles a chicken in the sense that it's if a chicken is kosher, a turkey is kosher. They're in the same kind of thing. It's different than, meaning it's different than, let's say, eagle meat, which I'm sure in some places they eat.
The horses and the ducks, they kosher too.
Exactly. Ducks are kosher as well, because they're similar. Whereas, and
I used to feed them with corn in the Europe. And they had a lot of fat. And we could cook with the fat.
Which is why duck is yeah, delicious.
Duck is not kosher.
They serve turkey here,
not
yeah.
All the time.
The meat is,
yeah, I know, I know. Meaning most Jews say, you know, turkey is fine. But like an eagle and a vulture, because those are also birds of prey,
yeah,
so we also avoid those. Right, falcons and hawks. Right, we don't eat those. Those are like birds of prey, and that gets to a deeper discussion about, you know, kosher, which maybe that could be for another time, about like the deeper ideas of kosher and about you are what you eat, and so we want to eat farm animals, which are domesticated, and we want to avoid eating lions and tigers, because those are more carnivorous and aggressive and wild, and we don't want to imbibe that.
You know how to make,
so that's all.
Soak them in clean water, in cold water.
So what about lion meat?
Later you salt them for a half an hour,
right,
and then you wash them.
So the question is, what about a lion? A nice lion, nice brown fur. So you could do that. No, do it with a lion.
A lion?
Yeah. So the question is, so we don't eat a lion. It's not kosher. Even if you do slaughter
it.
Even if you do slaughter it, right.
That's what the goyim.
Yeah. So, okay. So basically.
Is a duck a bird of prey?
Is a duck?
You said a duck isn't kosher.
No, a duck is kosher, we said. A duck is kosher. Yeah, so just to summarize, right, so we saw that at a certain point in the beginning of creation, God told us to eat only vegetarian at that point. Then after the flood, things changed. We were allowed to eat meat. We talked about some reasons why. And then we talked about Rabbi Cook, who had a whole approach about vegetarianism and how that's really the Jewish ideal, and how in the Messianic age we'll return to that. And then we also talked about how for holidays while it is an idea to have meat for sure, it's not an obligation, especially for those that don't enjoy meat. And if you enjoy, vegetarian, diet with a nice piece of pie, that's fine also. And then in the beginning, we talked about the pros and cons from an ethical and health perspective of being a vegetarian, not being a vegetarian. Obviously, Judaism believes in maintaining one's health, but we saw that...
Not just Judaism.
Everyone, right, but I'm saying, from a Jewish perspective, but we saw that, for instance, iron, it's better to get iron from meat, and the other side said, no, you can get iron better from being a vegetarian. So it seems like there's a discussion on both sides.
I'm just going to interrupt for a minute. You can stay and finish some more. Exercise is starting in the lobby. If you want to go to that, that's fine. If you want to stay and finish the discussion, go ahead.
Yeah, just 30 seconds. And then we said finally that kosher slaughter ideally is a very ethical way to kill the animal. But we acknowledge that things like veal, like kosher slaughter of veal, as well as just in general certain slaughterhouses do not necessarily live up to what we consider, having compassion, being compassionate people for how they treat, the animals I think they actually do stun the animals, but not to death, just to, get it to stop, and then they slaughter it, and, just like other things that PETA is not happy with. At the end of the day, though, that's one thing. The food is still kosher. As long as it's slaughtered correctly, and these other issues. If you'd like to be a vegetarian, Judaism says, go for it. So, okay, very good. I think lunch is pariv, is vegetarian, but dinner is not. So,
thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome.